in the 60s. Everyone was screaming about the popular band The Beatles. Everything is good until one superfan decides to kill one member of the band, John Lennon. From being a die-hard Beatles fan to a killer, he had a life going on to him and finally went to prison. Today, I'm talking about the Lennon killer, Mark Chapman. This is Cases of the Crimes. Hello, everyone. Hi, how you doing today? Well, you're looking for a real treat right now. Going back to the killing thing. And we're not killing. And this person's not going to kill people. We're talking about who killed a celebrity. Killed that star that has been falling down with millions of people watching. You know, we're very music fans, right? It's a very music fans. We all have been very, very popular for us. I mean, we probably rely on a lot of things here. But for this person here, he is really, really into the Beatles. He's a die-hard fan. Yeah, he is a 100% die-hard fan. But you don't know what the background about his life, or where he was, or something. So this is where we're gonna go to some of the things that he had been going through until he got caught and killed John Lennon. Okay, one of the most popular band member of the Beatles. We all listen to the Beatles, right? Yeah. Okay, so we're now pushing that thing down. With some of the background, we're going back to the life, and then we're dealing with the murder of John Lennon, so we're into the look at that stuff, and then some of the legal process they've been putting, and then the imprisonment. And then finally, on top of that, we'll have to end with some of the books, some of the interviews, all the media appearances that he had, and then parole. And there are some similar incidents, and there's film too that are referencing to a lot of stuff that kind of relates to him. Alright, are you ready to get this story started? Because I cannot wait to see what he had to offer. Alright, let's talk about him, Mark Chapman. Let's go. Okay, here we go. Mark David Chapman, born on May 10th, 1955 in Fort Worth, Texas. His father, David Chapman, was a SAB sergeant at the Air Force. His mother, Diane Nee Pease, P-A-S-E, was a nurse. So I've got his father and his mother. So his father was a staff sergeant and his mother was a nurse. And he also has a sister named Susan. 7 years later, so either. I mean, as a kid, he lived in fear of the father. Oh, throughout the back, he had started this little fear of his father because he physically abused towards his mother and unloving towards him, and that kind of sets in his background, that trauma that's happened when he was a kid. He had that little sort of drama going on here. His father was very, very abusive to both his mother and him. So he had to fantasize about having his godlike power over this little people. Probably like Jesus, or is not, but it's not really Jesus. Who lived in the walls of his bedroom. Like, he's the Lord. Praise and savior and all. That's kind of a little similar to Jenna. It's like a God figure, like a Jesus-like figure. Get a little bit of a foreshadow here. But we'll keep focused on this one. Okay, so he attended a Columbia High School in Decatur, Georgia. And then when he was 14, he was using drugs and skipped classes. Oh, being a bad guy, is he? Well, being a bad kid there. Well, teenager. Teenager and starts using drugs and loves to skip classes. And then he once ran away home to live in the streets in Atlanta for a couple of weeks. Jeez. Yep, now he becomes a runaway kid. Alright, and then he said that he was bullied at school because he was not a good athlete. Well, he's not physical enough to play sports. So, he was weak at it, you know. Very weak. Alright, and but by 1971, he became a born-again Presbyterian and distributed some of the biblical tracts. So it's Presbyterian, not a Catholic or anything. It's way totally different. And he met his first girlfriend, Jessica Blankenship, and began to work as a summer camp counselor in South DeKalb County in Georgia, YMCA. YMCA is like a gym thing. And also for kids camp or something, that's basically good. So yeah, he has his first girlfriend and he worked at the summer camp. So he was the counselor. And he's very popular with the children who named him Nemo, like Finding Nemo. And was made an assistant director after winning an award for outstanding counselor. So, well, congrats to him for becoming a great counselor. And the people who knew him in a, will call him an outstanding worker because he worked so hard in the being in the counselor at the YMCA, and call him Nemo because he's very, very good. He was a very good worker. They loved him. Okay, and then one of the recommendation for him. Read J.D. Salinger's The Catcher in the Rye. That's a recommendation from one of his friends. And that book, that's very significant to him. It's somewhat very related to him. That he reportedly wished to become his models after the protagonist, Colin Caulfield. Colin Caulfield was the is he the character? Yeah, he's the character of The Catcher in the Rye. So that was that book that he had read during when he becomes a counselor. So after graduating from high school, he moved to Chicago and played guitar in some churches. And some of the Christian nights churches and night spots. While his friend did some impersonations, acting like different people. So, going along, he graduated from high school. I think he's about 18 years old. Yeah. And then he worked successfully at the World Vision with Vietnamese refugees at the resettlement camp in Fort Chaffee in Arkansas. After he went to visit the Lebanon on that same work that he did. So, yeah. He played guitar because he loves music. Definitely loves his music. That's really great. Alright, and then he was named an arena coordinator and a key aide to program director David Moore, who said that, according to David Moore, he cared deeply for the children and worked hard. Yeah, he worked hard a lot. And he's a workaholic, just a little bit, but not that kind of workaholic. So he accompanied more meetings with the government officials and President Gerald Ford and shook the hand. So time that yes, he done a lot of work for the community out there. So finally meet with the officials and he shook Ford's hand, President Ford. And then now he then joined a Blankenship as a student in Covenant College. This is a liberal arts college in Lookout Mountain, Georgia. But he fell behind with his studies and became obsessed with the guilt with having an affair. Oh, that kind of turned something bad here. And he's having this suicidal thoughts and feel like he's a failure. Everyone has been going there like, oh my god, this is not good. I feel like I'm falling behind. I'm going to fail this class. Yeah, every college student has been going through that same spiel. So, unfortunately, he dropped out of his college after one semester and he broke up his girlfriend. Oh, that's bad. That's not good. Oh boy. And then he returned to work at the resilient camp, but he just left after there's an argument with the supervisor. Oh, that took a bad turn here. And then found work as an unarmed security guard. But it's a week-long course to qualify becoming an armed guard. Yeah. Oh boy. And then in 1977, he moved to Hawaii, where he wanted to attempt suicide by carbon monoxide. The station. This is connected hose to his car's exhaust pipe, and the hose melted. So, that definitely failed that attempt. Oh, he was so like on the verge to just kill himself, but it did not work. It didn't work as it should. So, a psychiatrist admitted him to the hospital for some clinical depression. And then, upon that release, he began working at the hospital. That's where he had to recover something. After their parents began divorce, so that cuts in. So, his mother finally joined him in Hawaii. So, it's just Chapman and his mother. They finally now moved to Hawaii. And then in 70, he went on a 6-week trip around the world. He's going through around the world, and this is like this place here. The vacation was partially inspired by the film called Around the World in the 80s. He visited a lot of places: Tokyo, Seoul, Hong Kong, Singapore, Bangkok, New Delhi, Beirut, Geneva, London, Paris, and Dublin. So he went to those places coming through. And then he has finally a relationship named with his travel agent, Gloria Ape. And they married on June 2nd, 1979. And they are still in the relationship, maybe. And he finally got a job at the Castle Memorial Hospital as a printer. He rather worked by himself than with the other people, so he likes to work by himself. Unfortunately, he was fired by the hospital and later been rehired, and then broke into this argument with the nurse. Oof. A lot of bad things happened about him, and he quit. Oh man, I don't know what's gotten to him, but that's bad luck. That's totally bad luck. So after that, he took a job as a night security guard and began drinking. So, love to drink. Now he likes to become a night security guard, but he started drinking. That drinking took a turn. So he developed some of the obsessions with the artwork, The Catcher in the Rye, the book, the music, and the musician himself, John Lennon. That's why he liked to be obsessed with it. Yes. And in September in 80, he wrote a letter to a friend, the Irish, that he stayed like, I'm going nuts. And he signed a letter, The Catcher in the Rye, because that was the book there. That's took a little sense there. And by the way, he had no criminal conviction before his trip to New York City to kill Lennon. So he didn't have any conviction at the time before he had to kill John Lennon for this. And that's where it goes. Oh man, he's going through a lot of bad luck with the jobs that he'd done. Lots of argument. He doesn't want to stand with this little argument thing. And man, he's going nuts for this. And started drinking, and oh god, this is a really crazy thing here. So, this is where to read out with a lot of things. This is everybody's reaction. So I'm going to have to go with the murder of John Lennon. This is where the part is. I'm just going to, well, probably going to take you some the stuff before he went down into the 80. Okay. Oh, wait. This is, here's some of the moments that he had done. You know what? Actually, there are some more details about him. All that stuff. Okay. So, let's read it out. Okay. So, what is his plan and what is his motive? Okay. So, he allegedly started planning to kill John Lennon. 3 months later, he had said he's a long time fan of the Beatles because it started for so long. So he turned against him due to that religious conversion. And for Lennon, he put up a 96 remark about Beatles being more popular than Jesus. That's his remark. That's according to him. And then some of the Chapman's Prayer Group made a little joke reference to that song Imagine, right? John Lennon. It says, and it went, imagine if John Lennon was dead. Some of the prayer group, they just made a little joke about it. And one of his childhood friends, Miles Minush, recalled that he said that the song was communist. So yeah, people took this in as a joke. It was like, imagine if he died. And that took a little wrong turn for that. And then also the song Imagine was communist. That kind of took a little idea for him to figure out, I'll find a way who to kill. John Lennon. But I need a plan. Okay, so he had been influenced by Anthony Foss's John Lennon One at a Time. That's about his lifestyle in New York, Lennon's lifestyle in New York. And according to his wife Gloria, she said that he was angry that Lennon would preach love and peace, but yet have millions. I mean, like either millions of people or millions of dollars. I don't know what he would prefer to. He was so mad that Lennon has everything and Chapman doesn't. And then he said this later on that, quote, he told us to imagine no possessions, and there he was, with millions of dollars and yachts and farms and country estates, laughing at people like me who had believed the lies and bought the records and built a big part of their lives around his music. I mean, when Chapman compared Lennon, I mean, John Lennon is very popular. He made a lot of money because of the songs with the Beatles and also himself, right? Yeah. Something a little took down, and he was a super fan, but he was so mad at John Lennon that he had everything and he doesn't. And then some of the weeks before the murder, he had listened to John Lennon, and then here's what he said in quotes. This is what he said. I will listen to this music and I will get angry at him for saying that he didn't believe in God. That he just believed in him and Yoko. And that he didn't believe in the Beatles. This was another thing that angered me. Even though this record had been done at least 10 years previously, I just wanted to scream out loud, who does he think he is saying these things about God and heaven and the Beatles? Saying that he doesn't believe in Jesus and things like that. At that point, my mom was going through a total blackness of anger and rage. So I brought the Lennon book home into the Chapter in the Rye milieu where my mindset is Holland Caulfield and anti-phoniness. Yeah. He had been going through a lot of mind that, yeah, he is so mad. He felt all this rage because of John Lennon. Like, why, John Lennon? Why do you have all this stuff? Why you don't believe in Jesus? And I refer to you that he's not an atheist. Okay. I wish John Lennon is an atheist, but he's not. But I don't think he's an atheist at all. No. I mean, he has everything he had. He has him. He has himself. He has his wife, Yoko Ono. He has all that stuff. But But for Chapman, gosh, he is so infuriating for him. So he took that book and put that into the catcher rye, and I put this little inner holder call field. You know that, because remember, that little sets in with that book, and you have to keep that in mind, the catcher in the rye, right? That was his book that read like right before he was like becoming a counselor, and he had this book, The Catcher in the Rye, right? That was that book. There are so many things. There's so many dropping little clues and all stuff. Okay, let's move on. So, his planning has been described as muddled. So, he had both support and deny whenever he felt justified by his spiritual beliefs at the time he had or intention of acquiring authority. So, he had thinking about that, wondering if all his beliefs is some, but that made me questioning about him a lot. The only time he made a public statement before sentencing and then several was during the psychotic episode, a brief psychotic episode. He's convinced the meaning of his actions to promote that book, the freaking book. I went to the single letter mail into New York Times asking for them to read the novel. Like, I mean, The Catcher in the Rye, I haven't read the book, but why do you want to kill John Lennon just because you want to support this book and you're liking that book so much? Oh, that's a really sad thing. So some of the journalists, James R. Gaines, who interviewed him, concluded that he did not kill John to become a celebrity. Very popular is, but well, he's very popular now. And in fact, he's in jail. So according to this portal, he had an alternate hit list of potential targets. And he had a lot of it other than Lennon. He could have gone to any celebrity other than Lennon. He would think Paul McCartney or Johnny Carson, Elizabeth Taylor, George C. Scott, or the former porcelain Jacqueline Kennedy, Isis, and then the elected president Ronald Reagan, or Hawaii Governor George Ariyoshi. Those were the list that he could have think of other than John Lennon. And in 2010, he said the only criteria for being famous, and he chose Lennon because he considered all the options that he wanted to kill. Those are the celebrities. Those were the people who are very popular because they had been everything. They've been on TV, they've been on music, a lot of it. But besides, you know, TV, and Chapman doesn't have anything because he's a loser. Could have gone to any other celebrity, but he chose John Lennon. So, it's somewhere rumored that he traveled to Woodstock, New York during one of the visits, looking for Todd Rundgren. That's another target that he wanted to get. So, he was wearing a promotional t-shirt for Rundgren's album, Hermit of Mink Hollow, but he was arrested and had this little copy of the book called Runt, The Ballad of Todd Rundgren, in Manhattan, in his hotel room. He was not aware of that little connection until much later he found out that. And then on the day of the murder, David Bowie appeared in the Broadway in the play The Elephant Man, and he said, "I was second on his list." Second? And then he said, "Chapman had a front row ticket to Elephant Man the next night. John Lennon was supposed to sit front row for that show too. So now after John was killed there were three empty seats in the front row. I can't tell you how difficult that was to go on. I almost didn't make it through the performance." Ugh. If Chapman didn't kill Lennon, then he would have come after David Bowie somewhere in the 80s. That would have been a very disaster. And if they would have died, then Lennon would still be alive today. But thank God Debo died in 2016. Well, he did not get killed by Chapman, but he had suffered from disease. I don't know what it's called. Let me look at it again on how did he die. So David Bowie died in 2016. I know he died in 2016. Let's see here. So let me look at it again. So yeah, he died of liver cancer in his apartment, in New York City apartments. So if Chapman would have killed David Bowie, then we don't know, but we'll still remember it. John Lennon would be here, but I'm glad David Bowie lived on until 2016. So rest in peace, David Bowie. We will all be missed. Alright, here comes the October and December, and that's where the shooting happened. Okay, so, he went to New York in late October 1980, because he's definitely intended to kill him. But he left to obtain some ammunition, some bullets, from his friend in the land before going to November. And in his, during his trip in New York in October, he was inspired this film called Ordinary People to Stop That Plans. And he returned to Hawaii and told his wife that he had been obsessed with killing John Lennon, that he had to kill this guy. So he showed her the gun and the bullets, but she did not inform the police or the mental health services. She refused to do that because that would definitely call someone out. And then he said that the message "Thou shalt not kill" flashed on that television at him. It was on the wall hanging that is what put up in the apartment. It was on the wall that they put up in the apartment for that. They keep trying to tell, well, the TV's trying to tell him that you cannot kill. So he made an appointment to see clinical surgery, but he did not keep it. He did not keep that little promise. And then flew back to New York on December 6th, 1980. That was the day before that. But he considered ending his life by jumping off a bridge from the Statue of Liberty. He wanted to do that, but he didn't. He didn't. So on December 7th, so Chapman accosted that singer James Taylor at the 72nd Street subway station, and according to James Taylor, he said, "The guy had sort of pinned me to the wall and was glistening with maniacal sweat and talking some freak speak about what he was going to do with his stuff and how John was interested and he was going to get in touch with John Lennon." And he also reportedly offered cocaine to a taxi driver. Goodness, he's going a little crazy. Yeah, he's going a little crazy. And then that night, so him and his wife talked about the phone about getting help with this little problems before working on a relationship with God, right? With God here. And then on the morning of December 8th, this is like a day before. So he left the room at the Sheraton Hotel, leave all his stuff behind that he want the police to find. Those are the evidence that they will be. He bought this one huge giant copy of The Catcher in the Rye. Guess that little back there. And he wrote, "This is my statement. This." Underlined. And then signed it by Holland Caulfield. And spent most of the day near the entrance of the Dakota apartment. That's the Dakota. That's this hotel. This is where he resides here in New York. Okay, where he lived. He lived there. He used to live there. Talking to some of the fans and doormen, all that stuff. And then by early in the morning, he was distracted and missed seeing Len step out of the cab and enter the Dakota. So finally enter in that apartment. And later that he met Len's housekeeper was returning from a walk with his Len's 5-year-old kid, Sean. And then he reached in front of the housekeeper to shake Sean's hand and said that he was a beautiful boy. Quoting that little song, Beautiful Boy, Darling Boy, that's one of his songs. Alright, in around 5 p.m., 5 o'clock. So, Lennon and Yoko were leaving the Dakota for some recording session, because they wanted to have another album to do. As they walked into the living room without saying any word, he held that copy of his album, Lennon's album, Double Fantasy, for him to sign. I mean, because he's such a fan, I want to sign that one. So we have the amateur photographer, Paul Garash, was standing by and took a little picture as he signed the album. Signed the little album for him. And then, Lennon said in an interview that he tried to get Garash to stay. And he asked for a loitering Lennon fan out to go out with him that night. He wanted to go out. And then he suggested that he would not have murdered Lennon that evening if they would have accepted his invitation or Garash had stayed. But he probably would have tried another day. He was attempting to have that little copy ready to go, ready to design. But there's a lot of distraction going on because there's a lot of fans out there. So Lennon and Yoko were just leaving and wanted to sign that little copy of the album that they had. Everybody loves John Lennon because, look, we just grabbed the album that we have and then signed it. It was really nice for that one to sign, and he did. Very good sign. Oh boy, oh my god. Alright. And then by 10:15, they returned to Dakota and Limousine. So this is 5 hours later, almost 6 hours. They got out of the vehicle and passed him, and then walked toward the archway and the entrance of that little building. That's where it is. And then behind him, he fired 5 hollow bullet points from a 38 special revolver. That's his weapon. Yeah, that's his weapon. And the 4 of them hit Lennon in the back and the shoulder, puncturing that left lung and left subclavian artery. It's right around the ribs, something. And then on the Louisville report, the Chapman softly called out Mr. Lennon before firing, and then dropped to a combat stance, and then boom, 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 boom. 5 shot, fire. And so he said that he does not recall saying anything, and he did not turn around. He didn't turn around. Does he turn around? He did not turn around. Lennon, and he did not turn around. Lennon heard Chapman's voice, the name, and just boom, shot down there. So he remained at the scene and appeared to be reading that book. Catcher in the Rye. Again, with this Catcher in the Rye bullcrap here. When the officers arrived and arrested him without the incident happening. And the first person recognized that the wounds were severe and decided not to wait for the little ambulance. So they rushed Lennon to the Roosevelt Hospital in the squad car, and he was dead on arrival. And then 3 hours later after that, that's around like December 9th, Chapman told the police, I'm sure the big part for me is Holland Caulfield, who was the main person in the book. The small part of me must be the devil. I know you're Holland Caulfield, but you're not Holland Caulfield. You're just more of a devil's side than Holland Caulfield. I know you try to be a hero, but you're not that kind of a hero at all. You're just fully all devil and no Caulfield. Wow. Yeah, he just turned around. I just wanted to say, hey, Mr. Lennon. And then before turning around, he doesn't like turning around. He just shot at the back, at the very back, and also the shoulder. And it was dead on arrival for that. Oh, goodness. Alright, anyways, let's go on. Move into another stuff. Okay. So we're on to the legal process here. So he was charged with the second degree murder, and he told police that he had to use the hollow point bullets. Yes, 5 of them, to ensure that he died. To ensure his death. five times from a .38 special revolver. And then Gloria Jemin, his wife, known of the preparations to kill him. But she took no action because he does not follow through at the time and she was not charged. She doesn't have anything to do with his plans and all. And then he said that he had a deep-seated resentment toward the wife, and that she didn't go to somebody, even the police, and say, "Look, my husband's bought a gun, and he says he's going to kill John." He did exactly as he was going to. All the plans he had done is exactly everything's all planned out. Yeah, that is something. Yeah, everything's all planned out. That's cool. Yeah, he did it. He did the thing. Guys, he did the thing. Alright, let's go to some of the mentors. So, lots of psychologists and psychiatrists interview him in 6 months. 3 for the prosecution, 6 for defense, and 7 of them behalf of the court. And look at that, a battery of 9 procedures and of 200 clinical interviews. All 6 of them has to conclude that he was psychotic. 5 were diagnosed paranoid schizophrenia, and 6 felt the symptoms were consistent with manic depression. Okay, manic depression, this is where it is a mood disorder characterized by periods of depression and periods. Feel like that you're happy, you're sad, or going through everything in between. Changing feelings, that's basically I would say, insert this. Yeah. And then some of the experts declared that his delusions fell short of psychosis and diagnosed with personality disorders. Is he? And then some of the experts concurred the examiners that he was delusional yet competent to stand trial. So delusional, but he'll still be in that LO trial. In some of the exams, he was more cooperative with the mental health experts than with the defense. And in one side, he conjured that he did not wish to be considered so like crazy. It was made that defense only declared him insane because they were hired. Don't call him crazy, but he was like insane at some point. So McGowan, the pastor of his church, and he visited Chapman in this quote. "I believe there's a denial of power at work, and initially embraced his old religion with new fervor, but he revealed the information to press that Chapman had told him in confidence. He said this, so Chapman was disavowed his renewed interest in Christianity, so doesn't want to anymore. He reverted to his initial explanation. He killed Lennon just to promote the book." Do I have to say this again? The Catcher in the Rye. Yeah. Okay, now let's go into the guilty plea. So we have a lawyer, Herbert Alderberg, withdrew that case of threats of lynching. So they feared that the fans might storm the hostel because they transferred him to the Rikers Island for the safety of it. Yeah, people were very angry because of him. Because he shot Lennon, right? Yeah. We didn't forget that. And after the hearing in 81, his new lawyer, John DeMarks, instructed him to enter the plea of by not guilty by the reason of insanity. But in February, he sent a handwritten statement to Nurse urging everyone to read that freaking book. And calling it an extraordinary book that holds many answers. Are there many answers in that book? I kind of wonder about that. So the defense sought to witness this mental state at the time of the killing here. Okay, so he told Marks that he wanted to drop the sand defense and plead guilty. So he decided he wanted to plead guilty. So he objected with some serious questions over his Chapman's sanity, and he challenged him to make the decision for that guilty. He wants to add this little guilty plea for Chapman. And by June 22nd, he said that God told him that plead guilty, and he will not change the plea or ever appeal regardless of the sentence. where the sentence is going to be, I had to plead guilty, no matter what the cost. So Mark opposed his change of plea, but he didn't listen. Chapman did not listen. So the judge refused the first sentence, saying that he had made a decision for his own will. So he decided to, plead guilty. Yep, he declared to come in and plead guilty. Yep, he did. With all of this one, he took the responsibility. I plead guilty. I'm just adding this plea. I'm guilty. So, he did. So, judge agreed to hit whatever Chapman is saying. He's guilty. Yes. The sentence took place on August 24, 1981. So, that's a year after. Or, a few months after. Toots gave evidence on his behalf. So Edwards interrupted Dorothy Lewis, which is a psychiatrist, indicating the purpose of hearing was determined sentence, and there's no question of his criminal responsibility. So she had to maintain this decision to change the plea, and did not appear with any reasonable or speculative, did not give us any reason why he wanted to change the plea. She implied that he did not want to allow someone with this little assessment. Okay. So this should argue that he committed the murder as an easy route to fame, because he has, so he did commit murder just to become famous. So Chapman asked if he had anything to say, and he rose and read some of the excerpts from that freaking book, Catcher in the Rye, which Holden tells his little sister what he wants to do with his life. So back to this book, he says, I keep picturing all these little kids playing some game in this big field of rye and all. Thousands of little kids, and nobody's around. Nobody big, I mean, except me. And I'm standing on the edge of some crazy cliff. What I have to do, I have to catch everybody if they start to go over the cliff. I mean, if they're running and they don't look where they're going, I have to come out from somewhere and catch them. That's all I do all day. I just be the catcher in a rye and all. Yeah, everything that did, this is all the reference of Catcher in a Rye stuff. Yeah, I think he was obsessed with Lennon. Look at this guy. He was obsessed with the Catcher in a Rye. I mean, I'm not sure how much Catcher in a Rye was, but I mean, they sell a lot of that. I'm not sure we sell the Catcher in a Rye. I will ask someone who's that after this episode. So anyway, so the judge ordered second treatment for him during his incarceration and sentenced to 20 years to life. So 5 years less than the maximum sentence of 25 to life. That's 25. So that was the second call. So 20 years to life. So in 1981, but by 1981, he was imprisoned at Attica, Correctional Facility. This is outside of where I am. Outside Correctional Facility, this is where I am. I am standing at where I am in Buffalo, New York. So he fasted 26 days in 1982. So the Supreme Court authorized force feed him. They had to force feed him. But in central New York, Martin Mahan said that he refused to eat with other inmates, but agreed to take some liquid nutrients. Doesn't like to eat without them, but he'll drink. So he was held in this solitary confinement for violent and at-risk prisoners due to concern that he might be harmed by the fans and some little general robbers. So there are 105 prisoners who were not considered a threat to him. They don't. Okay. He had his own cell, but spent, in quote, most of the day outside cell, working on housekeeping in a library, like all they do and stuff. So he worked in the prison as a legal clerk in Seuss Chap. Okay, barred from participating in the Attica workshops, which is the organization helping inmates adjust to life, some of the outside prison. And he was prohibited from attending violence and anger management classes due to his safety. So he wants to be away from all those people. So told the board with Joseph Ford that if he paroled, he said this, I would immediately find a job, and I really want to go from place to place, at least state, church to church, and tell people what happened to me and point them the way to Christ. I mean, if he say so. They said that if he could find a work as a farmhand or turn his ministry as a printer, like he worked at there before, just before that one. So he's in the family union program and is allowed one conjugal visit. He could visit one for per year, I think. A year of his wife since he accepted that little salt there. So that program allows him to spend 48 hours alone and his wife in a built prison home. And he also gets occasional visits from his sister, the clergy in New France. And by 2004, services. We have a spokesman, James Fletcher, said the chairman had been involved with some three minor incidents from 89 to 94 and delaying inmate count and refusing to follow the order. So he told about this one. And then 8 years later, 2012, this is May 15, he was transferred to Wind Correctional Facility in Alden, which is right close to one of my aunt's boyfriend over there in Alden. Yeah, but I'm glad when one of my aunt's boyfriend moved now to Florida. So thank God he moved to Florida. Wow, that's a lot of things going on for him. Okay, now that the imprisonment that he has a little life, I mean he did what he's supposed to do, and he has this catcher, right? That book is still following that, going through from the life that he killed John Lennon, and then everything else sets into place. That is a lot of thing to offer. Alright, there's a lot of books, some interviews, and media appearances, so we'll go away from this. So he refused all requests for the interviews following the murder and during the 6 years in Attica. He did not want to give the impression that he killed Lennon for some fame and notoriety. He doesn't want to do all of that stuff. But Gaines interviewed him and wrote this three-part 80,000 Word People Magazine series starting in 81. And it climaxed in February and March 1987. That was 6 years later. So, told the parole that he regretted the view. He doesn't like what this picture. So, and then get a series of this audio tape interviews to Jack Jones of the Rochester for Democratic Chronicle. That was okay. And Jones published the Let Me Take It Down, Inside the Mind of Mark David Chapman, the man who killed John Lennon in 1992. So he published that book. And then so Jones asked Chapman to tell his story for mugshots, which is the court team. And with his first book here approaching, but he refused to go on camera, but consented to tell a story in a series of some artists. He doesn't want to be in camera, but he will tell you about that stuff through audio tapes, through his voice. So in 1992, that's his first television interview, which is 2020. And by December 17, we have Larry King talk about all that stuff. Oh, wow, that's a lot of things. He had been lots of interviews, but he refused to do it. And he regretted it. But he would like to talk about that stuff in the audio, when the listen stuff. Okay, some of the applicant in denial, because he has something to do with it. So Jem became eligible for parole in 2000. That's after 20 years in prison. He required to have a parole hearing every 2 years and onward for that one. He's a three member. He has denied Jem's parole 11 times. So he denied. And then for the first parole hearing, you're going to send a letter to the board that he should stay behind bars for the remainder of his life because she was angry. And then we have the senator and the chairman. Okay. And wrote a pro. Wrote to Brian Travis saying, it is responsibility for the pro board to ensure the public is protected from the release of dangerous criminals like Chapman. I don't think he's innocent, but it rather stayed anonymous. Okay. This is all the timeline that he had, but I don't think I have to go through all of this. But as of 2022, he had that 12 paroles, so yeah. Well, he's waiting for his 12th parole on August, which is a couple weeks from today. No, a couple months from today. And there are some similar incidents that referred to John Hinckley. Like, John Hinckley Jr. tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan less than 4 months after his murder. And police found a copy of that book and among all the personal belongings from the hotel. So, he left the tape in the hotel room, which he stated that he mourned Lenin's death. He said that one of my idols was murdered, and now George Foster is the only one left. And he added that anything that I might do in 1981 would be solely for George Foster's sake. That took a lot of turn, isn't it? Yeah. Alright, let's hear some of the reactions to everyone that have been involved with a lot of stuff. Okay, and this is one of the book. This is one from the media announcement about this one. Okay, so we'll talk about. I already talked about him in his perspective point of view, but let's see how other people reacted to this. Let's see where the aftermath goes. Okay, let's rewind back to where he is after the shooting and died at the little hospital. Dead on arrival. Okay. So, Ono has asked not to report to me that her husband was dead until she informed his son, Sean, was home. So, Ono said he was probably watching television and she did not want to learn of the death from the announcement. However, Alan J. Weiss happens to be treatment for the emergency of being injured by a motorcycle crash. And the officers wheeled Lenin in that same room as Weiss had mentioned. And then Weiss called the decision and relayed that little information for it. Okay. So the news, we have a news president, Ron Aldridge, received the word of death during the last few moments of the telecast of the Monday Night Football. This is between Patriots and Dolphins. While the game tied about to attempt the field goal to win the game. But they informed Guilford and Costello for shooting and suggested they report that little murder. So, they interviewed Len during the Monday football in 74. But chosen to do but balk at one delivering the news. Okay, and then Guilford convinced them saying, you got to. If you know it, you got to do it. Don't hang on it. It's a tragic moment and this is going to shake up the whole world. So, here's the news was broken, and this is what it follows. But it's suddenly been placed by a total perspective of us. I'll finish this. They're in hurry up fence. And Glyphosate said, third down, fourth. It'll be fourth down. Cannonball will let it run for one final attempt. In that second, this is talked about it. Timeout's called with 3 seconds remaining. Johnson's on the line, and I don't care what's on the line. Howard, you got to say what we know in the booth, okay. I had to say, alright, now it's just spoken, no matter who wins or loses, and it's still a tragic confirmed to us by ABC News New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to the result at the Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which, in due bound, we had to take. Frank? Indeed, yes, that's after a little pause. Oh boy, let's see some of the reactions from the associates. So Stephen Lin, when informed Ono that she banged her hand against the concrete floor of the hospital. Oh god. And his account was disputed, but two of the nurses were there. And in 2015, Ono denied hitting her hand on the floor and decided that Her sheep concerned at the time to remain calm and take care of the sunshine. Okay. She led away from Russellville by policemen and Geffen records. Okay. And the following day, he issued a statement. Okay. There's no funeral for John. Later in the week, we will set the time for a silent vigil to pray for his soul. We invite you to participate from whatever you are at the time. John loved and prayed for the human race. Please pray the same for him. Love, Yoko and Sean. So, that's where he was going. For George Harrison, issued the same in the press. After all we went through together, I had and still have great love and respect for him. I am shocked and stunned. To rob a life is the ultimate robbery in life. The perpetual encroachment on other people's space is the second limit to the use of the brain. It is an outrage people can take other people's lives when they obviously have gotten their lives in order. And then he later probably told his friends, I just wanted to be in the band. Here we are, 20 years later, and some whack job has shot my mate. I just want to play a guitar in a band. And then Paul McCartney addressed the outside success song and said, I can't wait to take up the moon. John was a great man who will be remembered for his unique contributions to art to music piece. He is going to be missed by the whole world. And then later that day, he was in Upper Street recording soon when the reporter asked him for that reaction. He understands. Drag, isn't it? Okay, cheers. Bye-bye. And apparently the casual response was rather criticized. So he later said he had intended no disrespect and simply was unable to articulate the feelings and give him that little shock he felt over that little murder. And then Ringo Starr was in Bahamas, seeing a little phone call from the kids about the murder. And he flew to the next to the console owner and played with son Sean for that happened. And then the entire public response is what the Republicans heard about. So per intuition on the 14th December, millions of people around the world paused for 10 minutes for the silence to remember Lennon, including 30,000 people gathered in his own town, Liverpool, and over 225,000 people at the Nuremberg Bandshell in Central Park, close to that little scene. And then for those 10 minutes, every radio station in New York City went off air, just to make a little tribute for this. And then at least 3 Beatles fans committed, suicide after the murder. And then undertook to make a public appeal asking mourners to not give in to despair. And then on 18th January 1981, we have an open letter from Ono. Appeared in the New York Times and Washington Post titled Ingratitude. And she thanked to the millions of people who mourned Lennon's loss and wanted to know how they could commemorate his life and help her and Sean. Which is the little sign. And then we have Double Fantasy, who was released 3 weeks before his murder, to someone that makes critical reaction and saw unremarkable sales and became a commercial success and won the 1981 Grammy Award at the Grammy Awards, the 24th Grammy Awards. So he deserved to have that Grammy. And then Ono released a solo album, Season of Glass, and the cover album is the photograph of his Lennon's blood spatter glasses that he was wearing when he was shot. And that same year, she released Walking on Thin Ice, the song that Lennon had mixed at the record plant less than an hour before he was murdered as a single. It's part of the little single. And then, the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan by John Kennedy took place 3 months after his murder. And they found a copy, we're talking about this. He left a cassette tape which he mourned. He wants to take attempt to kill Ronald Reagan, but that kind of stopped him. I already talked about that one. And then June 2016, so this is Jay Hastings, which is the doorman who tried to help Lennon, sold that t-shirt he was wearing that night. It was stained with Lennon's blood and auctioned for $42,500. So he was the doorman at the Dakota and had to sell that little shirt that was where got shot and the blood splat on the shirt that would have to give it to somebody for that money. Oh boy, wow. So yeah, I already explained to you about the aftermath. So yeah, his remains, Len's remains, were cremated at the Ferncliff Cemetery in Hartsdale, Winchester, New York. His ashes were scattered in Central Park. That's the little apartment. And then, and I already just talked about Mark David Chapman and all that little fun stuff that he had done. Yeah, that's everything you need to, that's everything you need to know about Chapman, and then some of the reactions from the shooting and all that fun stuff. Yeah. This is terrifying. And we've probably seen a lot of all this, all Chapman he had done was murder, but he had to do it. He had to kill Allenby because of what he said was whatever Lennon said, that made Chapman very, very angry. And he decided to go to New York City and just took that shot and pointed at him. And Jonathan didn't turn around. Just stopped there and just boom, 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 boom. Just shot that one with a revolver. And lots of fans were, and his associates were, they were very, very sad that this happened. This tragic thing happened. Yeah, that happened in 1980s. It's right around Christmas time this happened. Yes, yeah, it is. It is. It is right around where Christmas time happened. They wanted to take the break. So, well, I think they broke up the... I'm wondering... Okay, let me check the... Hold on. Let me back that a little bit and see when did the Beatles head. Broke the band. So they finally broke the band in 1970, I think. So yeah, they finally break up the band around the 70s. So this is after, right? Yeah, this is the 70s, and that's where they broke up the band after. So yeah, this is like 10 years late. This is around 10 years later after Beatles have been disbanded. And then this happened. That's a very tragic thing here when someone goes through and all of that. That's a lot of it. Because I really talk about Jim and, well, on one side, and then on the other side, I always go to look at the other side and see what people were thoughts of this, their reactions to. Yeah. It's all because of him. Whatever he says something that's not quite right, yeah, he had to kill it. And that's what he wants. And he wants to be emulating as Holland Caulfield, the hero of the book, The Catcher in the Rye. But I don't think he's a hero to us. I think he's more of like a devil than Caulfield. Well, that's it. That's the end of Mark David Chapman and all the details of the murder of John Lennon. Yeah. Alright guys, that's the end of this episode. I will see you guys next time for another case. Okay? Sweet dreams. Oh, we're not going to see, you won't be able to see this, but this is really more, this explaining, there's a lot of explanation about this. I read through all of this, so I was like, wow. He had done it. Alright guys, goodbye, and take care.